A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 239. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion of In the Flesh. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we are looking at this very grim and gritty show from the BBC in 2013 and 2014. Lots of adult stuff, lots of adult themes in the total of 9 one-hour episodes spread over 2 series, 1 of 3 and 1 of 6 episodes. And it was looking at the aftermath of a zombie rising. It's zombie time here on British Invaders.
It is, but it's almost post-zombie time because we are looking at essentially cured zombies. They're referred to as PDS sufferers, partially deceased syndrome, among other names. And they can take this drug regularly, which allows them to regain their personalities and their intelligence and act like humans again. And we are dealing with the reintegration of these people into society.
Yes, that's right. And of course, it's going to raise all sorts of strange tensions and conflicts when these PDS sufferers return to their families, to their communities, to areas that they previously terrorized when they were in their rabid or rotter status. There's going to be lots and lots of very, very high tension, I guess, is the description. It's quite a tense and pressure cooker-like situation.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, it's also filled with allegory. Now, we talked quite a bit about Series 1 and a little bit about Series 2 last time, but let's get into Series 2 a bit more now. The town of Rorton becomes even more of a pressure cooker when the local MP comes to town, and she was brought in as a victus candidate, this anti-PDS political party, and she is waging this campaign against the PDS sufferers and trying to keep them restricted as much as possible and using the law to do this. And their rights to travel and their rights to work are being restricted. And they are put into these sort of forced situations as well.
Yes, that's right. I mean, we have the central character, Kieran Walker, who we mentioned in our last show, who's the sort of focus of this of it all. He is a PDS sufferer brought back to live with his family in this sort of difficult situation. And as you say, rights to travel curtailed because he wants to go on a trip. There's a big plan for him to take a trip into France and do some of those sort of student backpacking sort of things. But of course, he finds out that his passport is no longer valid because it doesn't describe him as a PDS sufferer. And in fact, rather than travelling abroad, he has to join the ranks of a form of community payback scheme. He has to wear or don the orange tabard and start doing community work. And it's a bit like the young offenders that we saw in Misfits in the way that the PDS sufferers are treated. But of course, without the sort of broad humour we had in that show, this is a much more serious take on one group or one section of society being treated in a different way because of their past history.
Yes, it's quite a different situation from Misfits, where we had in that series young people who had committed crimes being sentenced to some months of community service. in a way that is quite realistic to things that are actively done. But in the flesh, we have something where the PDS sufferers, because of the outbreak when they were rabid and when they were clearly not themselves, well, it's deemed that they still have to pay back for what they've done. So they're put onto these sort of forced work details, building fences, and it has sort of a forced labor, hard labor kind of feel and implication to it, which is quite dark, to say the least.
Yes, I mean, there's one storyline about another PDS sufferer who, before he died, was trying to build a local business, trying to get himself going. And of course, he finds afterwards, as a treated PDS person, he can no longer run his own business. Instead, he has to join this community payback scheme, which causes all sorts of conflict for him. And when you tell one part of society that they can't do certain things, you're perhaps not surprised to learn that there is some resistance to that, and that members of that group will start to look for ways of protesting or ways of expressing their outrage. So it's perhaps not too surprising that Kieran Walker and several other PDS sufferers are increasingly drawn to the teachings of Simon Munro, who we mentioned in our last episode, this charismatic leader, a speaker on behalf of the Undead Liberation Front, a follower of a mysterious internet figure known as the Undead Prophet. And he will sort of, I suppose, in a way, become the resistance to people like the Victus MP and to the surviving members of the Human Volunteer Force, all those who seek to ostracize and curtail the rights of the former rabid or the former rotters.
Yes, Munro and his group tend to be sort of cult-like. And you have, with that, the reaction of the PDS sufferers where they decide to sort of move away from society at large and form their own group with their own teachings and deal with things internally. And then in some cases have some political opposition to try to do, you know, be able to do the things that they want to, but there is a withdrawing from society there as well. And you have other PDS sufferers resorting to effectively to drugs. We have like something that's like a PDS drug rave that is happening, and of course complications when things get out of hand or go wrong with that. We have a drug that PDS sufferers take in some cases that allows them to revert to a rabid state only very briefly. So they, you know, become rabid, then have some kind of rampage, and then revert back to their treated state, some minutes later. So we have the PDS sufferers who are clearly being mistreated in at least some of the situations, resorting to a variety of different things.
Yes, as you can probably tell if you've not seen this show, in the second season they've got 6 one-hour episodes, so there's a bit more time for Dominic Mitchell and his other writers to explore different storylines and different angles on the aftermath of the zombie rising. And as you say, Brian, we get some weird stuff. The PDS drug rave, where what they're taking appears to be derived from sheep brains, and a nice little nod back to Romero zombie genre, I suppose, that consuming brains gives the PDS sufferers a form of high, and they do this by consuming or eating a drug made from sheep brains. So there's lots of different little storylines. I mentioned the businessman who was unable to pursue his job beforehand because he has to go back on the community payback scheme. There's lots of little different angles and stories in this second season.
Yes, there was also a thing about a man who had died and comes back as a PDS sufferer, and his wife has remarried, and he still loves his wife, and to him, you know, it's still his wife, but she's now married to someone else because she had been widowed. So you have some interesting and complex things with sort of individual character types of things like that. In addition to what the PDS sufferers do, the humans also have a variety of ways of dealing with things. You have people who want to go back to embracing their loved ones who have come back. We have people who go into denial over it. You have people in the human volunteer force who want to go back to hunting and killing. You have people who want to use legal means to, you know, restrict the PDS sufferers. So you have a lot of different people doing different things in the situation that's there. And that's part of what makes this show so interesting.
Yes, there are lots of fascinating bits and pieces. As you say, the former husband moving into the same house as his wife and her new husband. And you can imagine that's going to cause all sorts of tensions and conflict, and does indeed. There's lots more room, I think, in season two. And as a result, the storylines go off in very interesting directions.
That's right. And they deal with things like what happens when something goes wrong with the neurotryptyline drug they're using to control this. What happens when, someone misses a dose because they're in the wrong place and it's not there. So on and so forth. We get more developments with Amy Dyer as she gets involved with Monroe's group and the sort of cult-like stuff happening there, and you know, there are different things happening with her, and the possibility that she may have a special role with the Rising and what happened, and possibly Kieran could also have a special role with it. And there were some things that were clearly put in place to go into series 3, which never happened, which is a bit of a disappointment. I would have liked to have seen series 3, but there were lots of interesting things in the first two series for sure.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, as you say, there are interesting bits and pieces from the Undead Liberation Front, and this idea that, as we talked about in our last episode, that this small Lancashire town of Rawton appears in some ways to have been the epicentre of the Rising. And as such, it's possible that the first riser may have come from Rawton. And the Undead Prophet and the Undead Liberation Front are particularly interested in finding that first riser for some reason. And we get hints sort of thrown out during this season as to who that might be. Some of the characters are mentioned. And then, of course, as you say, Brian, it does sort of end with a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end of series two, setting up what would have been a third season. But sadly, as is so often, we'll never get that resolution because it was cancelled, sadly.
That's right. Although I think the cliffhanger is not too bad, because the things that we had been dealing, that they had been dealing with in the second series, are pretty much resolved at that point.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the zombie genre, and in particular, because of In the Flesh, let's speculate for a moment as to who the zombies represent or who the rotters represent in this show. Why are we so afraid of them? Because we've mentioned it already, but In the Flesh does indeed deal with discrimination, and it makes the rotters and the PDS sufferers that they become very much the downtrodden and most hated parts of society.
Yeah, and they're shown as people who some people don't want to see them taking jobs and benefits that they feel should be going to themselves rather than to the people who are different. So there are definitely elements of bigotry and discrimination that fit into this, and ideas of things like anti-immigration sentiments and racism are certainly reflected in the allegory here, as is a lot of the fear of terrorism and things like that are definitely reflected in this.
Yes, because, you know, it's clearly shown that parts of the society, not only do they not want PDS sufferers to have rights or jobs or benefits, they don't want them to have any form of fun even. And so they're very sort of keen to try and litigate or make illegal the sort of drug rave we've talked about, or even the idea that PDS sufferers might even have sex seems to be quite a difficult one for the supposedly normal members of society to deal with. And when you get characters like Ms. Martin, the Victus MP, who is very outspoken against the rights of PDS sufferers, with her whipping up ferment, then it all becomes, again, quite a difficult and strained situation. And as you've said, Brian, it's sort of reflecting some of the worst aspects of modern society by using the zombie genre.
Yes, absolutely. And that's something that I think it does very well. And it does it in a way that is quite complex. It doesn't oversimplify things too much, which was something that I appreciated. And there were a variety of different approaches from both the PDS sufferers and from the quote-unquote normal humans. So it's interesting to see that, and they worked with it very well.
Yes, they do. And it does, as we say, hold up this dark mirror to modern society and perhaps shows us things that we don't enjoy seeing perhaps so much. I mean, I have heard from people that our fear of zombies is a fear of immigrants and immigration, which is why so often in the movies and TV shows you see the non-zombie humans sort of barricaded in with fences and barriers and so on. And you could certainly look at In the Flesh, at 21st century Britain, that it reflects some of those fears that people have about immigrants coming in and jobs and benefits and so forth, and shows some of the sort of nastier aspects of British society as a result in the way that we deal with the downtrodden and people with less material things to enjoy than the rest of us. And here it is in the PDS sufferers and the way they're treated by Rorton. Very interesting.
Yes, absolutely. And I think where this differs from most of the zombie genre things that I've seen is because of the treatment and the fact that most of the PDS sufferers we see are not in a rabid state. They're in the treated state. It means that we have zombies who are intelligent and functional in society. And the argument that they that we have to keep them away because they're always trying to kill us and eat us is not as clean cut as it is in many other shows and films, where the zombies are not intelligent and they are simply trying to kill and eat us.
It's very clever stuff, and I think it's very well handled by this show.
So I think this is a good segue into our own thoughts about what we liked and what we didn't like about In the Flesh. So, Eamon, what did you like about this series?
Well, we've described it already. I think Dominic Mitchell's 21st century twist on the zombie genre and using it as a way of looking at the dispossessed members of our society and how we treat them, I think that's incredibly clever. You know, I've made a note that perhaps it ran out of steam in the second series, but we could say actually it even picked up and accelerated in the second series because it had the room to look at other elements of rights and benefits and taking those rights and benefits away from members of our society. So I think the concept and the initial writing are very, very good. One of the main things that I liked about this show. What about yourself, Brian? What would be your main like?
Well, I have to agree that the allegory in this, and I keep using that word, but it's the right word for it, it's very powerful in this. And the fact that they have not just a simple, you know, sort of monstrous force that is trying to get us, but the fact that they have these treated, intelligent, zombie-like characters, I think makes this quite different from anything else I've seen in the zombie genre. And it gives us something where we can have several different approaches and points of view on both sides. And that was something that I really liked, was having the allegory that was sufficiently complex that we could see, you know, not just humans trying to fend off zombies, but humans who are trying to use legal means to keep them in check, and humans who tell the zombies that they have to cover up with contact lenses and camouflage moose in order to fit into their own lives. And humans who are perfectly okay with them being back in their old lives. And humans who, you know, want to pick up knives and guns and just kill them. And likewise, in the zombies themselves, we have some who want to fit into their own lives completely. We have some who want to fit into their own lives, but, you know, go to these zombie raves and do these other kinds of things. And then we have some who want to pull away from society into something that's quite like a cult. So we have some really interesting things going on in this. And that, you know, I thought that was very strong.
Okay. We usually talk a little bit about the look and the sound of the production, and certainly it's very well filmed, I think very well directed. Edmund Butt's music is good. And of course, we've got the special effects and makeup, which, as we might expect, are really quite tremendous in places when we get the various zombie or rabid action. Although, interestingly, it's also in a nice sort of ironic twist, when the PDS sufferers begin to sort of rebel by not wearing their human contact lenses and going around looking slightly more like their rabid state. Of course, we then got the actors wearing the sort of white contact lenses more often. And I think that's quite well done and a neat little twist in this show.
Yes, those things were done quite well. There was some subtlety to how they did the makeup, in that when the PDS sufferers were using the camouflage moose, it didn't look quite the same on everyone. And that was sort of based on what the characters were doing. So Kieran clearly laid it on quite thickly because he really didn't want to show his PDS nature at all. And he looked almost orange in skin tone. It was quite, you know, not a realistic looking flesh tone. And then you had Amy, who only just barely wanted to have a more human look. So she was wearing it and looked more human, but she looked really quite pale. And then in the other groupings of people we see there, I don't think it was a speaking part, but there was a young woman who was a PDS sufferer who looked, you know, pretty convincingly human. And it was sort of the implication that she was someone who, you know, beforehand in life wore quite a bit of makeup and knew how to put it on well, so she could get a convincing impression. So it was nice to see them doing those sorts of subtle things in there.
Yes, it's outstanding work by the makeup department on this show. As you say, very clever, very subtle. The variations in the cosmetic camouflage they wear, it's really well done. And the performances of the actors, Brian, I think, you know, it's a well-acted show. Any standouts for you?
Well, I think Amy Dyer was performed very well, as was Kieran. And Jem, his sister, was also, considering the age of the actress and what they were asking her to do and everything, it was pretty good. All in all, the acting, I think, was pretty solid in this.
Yes, and as you say, you've mentioned the three sort of young actors at the heart of it, and they do very well indeed in quite difficult roles. And as you say, Emily Bevan as Amy Dyer really sort of stands out with her lively personality and her different take on her approach to her formerly undead status. So yeah, it's pretty good stuff all the way around, I think.
Yeah, even with people like Wunmi Misaku as Maxine Martin, the MP from the Victus Party, maybe not as challenging a role as some of them, but she's very convincing that this is absolutely what she believes in, and she's doing, she's doing what she believes is right. And it's very much what you might expect from an MP from an upstart party in that situation.
Yes, it is. As you say, she becomes, I suppose, in a way, the main villain or baddie of the second season, with her views and the way she restricts the actions of the PDS sufferers. And she does it very well. You know, it's a tough role in a way, but she certainly convinces us.
Yes, and as much as they have villains in this series, they don't quite have villains in the traditional sense, but they do have people like her who are, clearly antagonists to the central characters.
Yes, I suppose what we should say is we have extremes on both sides of the divide. We have extremes in the humans, and we have extremes in the undead or the undead liberation front. And we have characters like Kira and Amy and Jem stuck in the middle and trying to work out some form of life. So, yeah, challenging stuff for the actors.
We have several different names for the zombie characters. And I liked how they did that. I liked how they took different points of view and had different groups choosing what suited them to call this new group.
Yes, that's right. And perhaps the Undead Liberation Front sort of seeking ownership of the term undead rather than the use of PDS. And of course, the HVF, the Human Volunteer Front, very keen to say that these were rotters or rabid members of society. So yeah, the way they're referred to is very clever. And the wordplay, as I talked about in the first episode, very, very smart indeed.
And it isn't until the second season that this zombie-like group is giving themselves a name. The government had given them this name, PDS Sufferers. And then you had, you know, Rotters and Rabbids, which were clearly derogatory names, especially Rotter. But it's in the second season when you start hearing them call themselves the undead, which I don't think we had heard in this series until they started using it for themselves. And we also hear them in the Liberation Front calling themselves the Redeemed, which brings in this whole new set of ideas in this cult-like group where they're considering themselves chosen ones. You know, they're the ones who are better off now in their view. So we get, you know, quite a rich picture they're painting of this world.
Okay, so lots of very strong features for this show. Was there anything about it that you found less successful, Brian? Any negative facts you'd like to pick out?
Well, I don't know about less successful, but it is something where it is what it is. And it is a dark show. It's quite grim. It generally lacks humor. And, you know, it was built as a show that is about the allegory and about these very grim and difficult situations that people on both sides find themselves in and have to deal with. So you do have to know what you're getting into, that this is not a happy or humorous show. It is really quite grim, but I think it works well, given that that's what it's doing.
Yes, I mean, that was my main problem with the show, is that it is so dark and nasty. And it is, you know, it looks at the nastier parts of our modern life and the way that we treat other human beings. So it's all a bit, can be a bit humorless and dark, as you say. Not even Amy Dyer can cheer us up with her lively personality and sort of humorous take on life. And of course, it's filmed in a sort of bleak northern landscape. I think they're filming at the time of the year when it seems to be either damp or rainy or grey skies. So there's not much sunshine or colour in this show, which sort of adds to the relentless sort of darkness of it all, I think.
Yes, and I think that works better in a show that has a run of this length that was only 9 episodes, or maybe it could have had a third season and been, you know, 12 or 15 or something, but it's not something with dozens and dozens of episodes that runs many years. And I think things that are as grim as that and sort of lack humor work better in that shorter run.
Yes, I mean, we've mentioned Misfits, I think, as a show with perhaps a similar intended audience, certainly with that sort of youthful young adult lifestyle. There is drugs and sex, there's plenty of gore and violence for a zombie show, of course, but it doesn't have the humour of Misfits to keep us coming back. There are no jokes, really.
Yes, I don't think this focuses as much on that sort of younger audience, that younger but adult audience that Misfits did. I think this is a little broader with an adult audience because it's centered around the allegory and some of these different ideas. So, Eamon, I have to ask, what did you think of this from a medical point of view, with the way that PDS was treated and things related to that?
It's a strange one. I thought, you know, perhaps the bits that worked best was the sort of post-traumatic counselling that we see the PDS sufferers going through. And that seemed very sort of accurate for the people who were dealing with some unpleasant memories of what they'd done in their rotter or rabid status. The medical stuff about the neurotriptyline, there's a name that's clearly just been hashed together from a couple of other medical words, and the injections in the back of the neck, that's, I think, something very much from film and TV rather than medicine. So, yeah, some hits, some misses from a medical point of view. Certainly the counselling that they go through, particularly in the first episode, I thought that was very well done. The medical facility in Norfolk is a bit more traditional zombies in cages and being led around with long poles and so on. So that was a bit more genre, I think.
Okay, fair enough. So let's get into our recommendations. Eamon, why don't you start with this one?
Okay, well, I found this one a tricky one, actually, Brian. I mean, it's certainly extremely well made. It's an extremely clever concept. But my problem was the unrelenting grimness and grittiness of it all. And I began to long for those moments when Emily Bevan as Amy Dyer was on screen, because at least she seemed to be having some fun. And nobody else in this show seems to be having any sort of fun at all. So it's a slightly guarded recommendation from me. I think if you haven't seen it, the big advantage is that if you can access BBC iPlayer, you can watch the first season for free on there and get an idea whether you might like it or not. It might be that I would point you in the direction of Misfits as a much more fun show, which I've mentioned a couple of times, before you come to In the Flesh. But if you like the zombie genre, if you want to see something slightly different done with it, even though there'll be plenty of zombie action along the way, then yes, check out those first three episodes on the iPlayer and come back and let us know what you think. What about yourself, Brian? What would your recommendation be?
Well, I'm going to recommend this one. I enjoyed it a lot. It is a very strong series. I keep mentioning how much I love the allegory in it, but it really is done very well. The writing and the performances are good. It has a lot to it, and was really very well made. It is definitely a grim show. That's true, and you should know that going in, that, you know, you're going to be watching a grim show that doesn't have a lot of humor to it. But it's really very good, so it's a solid recommendation for me.
Okay, and of course, please come along to the Facebook group and tell us what you think about In the Flesh, particularly if you go and watch those first three episodes. Come back and give us a review.
Yes, absolutely. So, in summary, In the Flesh brought us a world where the classic zombie apocalypse or uprising of the dead had happened, but then been brought into control by treating the zombies, who are now known as PDS sufferers, among other things. That's partially deceased syndrome. And they are now, as long as they continue to take their medication, able to continue as intelligent humans with their own memories back and strange zombie-like appearances that they still need to cover up, or in some cases choose to cover up or not cover up. And we are brought into this world where we have people who have lived through the zombie uprising, who have to deal with the fact that these PDS sufferers are now back and among them, and have to find a way to deal with this situation, to live with it. And the PDS sufferers themselves also need to find a way to live with what they've done and with the world that they are now living in. So we end up with a series that is very rich in allegory and deals with issues of discrimination and integration of troubled elements of society.
Okay, a very interesting show from BBC Three. Will we get the likes of this sort of thing again in the future? Who knows?
Yes, we miss our BBC Three, don't we?
We do. So, please come back next time and join us for Codename Icarus. It's another BBC show, but this time from 1981, a children's TV show, five parts, a spy-fi, with a young genius at the centre of the intrigue, something quite interesting for us to talk about when we come back next time.
Yes, indeed, that should be an interesting one for sure. So, until next time, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there, where we have some interesting posts from us and from our listeners, and a variety of fun discussions going on. So it has some nice stuff there to allow us to interact with listeners, which is always something that's great to do.
Yes, very much. And if you're listening to this show the same week that it's released, then do drop by the Facebook group for a chance to win my copy of the In the Flesh DVD. Or perhaps you could join us at the Voice of Geeks Internet Radio Network, where British Invaders is one of a stable of great geek-related shows there. We're broadcast Mondays and Tuesdays at vognetwork.com. Come along and have a listen, or have a listen to some other great shows.
Yes, please do. So, thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very, very much for being with us, and until next time, it's Eamon in England wishing that I had some more brains.